Live and local, you're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017, and I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, we'll get an overview of this year's Jazz and Classics Festival with guests William Ransom and Reggie Schapp. We'll find out about the City Museum's new exhibit, Stuffed Stories and Sticky Notes. Joe Salatin, Alaskan farmer, will talk with us about some workshops, and Gigi Monroe will be here to tell us about upcoming Pride events. Andy Klein from the Alaskan Brewing Company will be here to highlight their new raspberry wheat beer. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. And weather for the rest of today, widespread rain showers, highs around 50, winds to 25 miles per hour. It is 49 degrees at the Juno International Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. The Nebraska Supreme Court says it will hear an appeal by four White Clay liquor stores forced to close by the state's Liquor Control Commission. The Omaha World Herald reports the decision means the ultimate ruling over the closures will come sooner rather than later. As Jim Kent reports, it's the latest in a back-and-forth legal battle playing out even as the stores in the tiny town on the edge of the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation were forced to clear their shelves over the weekend.
After the Nebraska Liquor Control Commission voted on April 19th to deny renewing liquor licenses to four stores in the small town of White Clay, a district court judge voided the decision and ordered that the stores be permitted to sell beer pending an appeal. Several hours later, the tables were turned again when the Nebraska Attorney General challenged the judge's ruling. Noting that Nebraska law places lower court decisions on hold for up to 6 months when an appeal is in process, the Attorney General overrode the judge's decision. As a result, beer supplies were removed from the stores on Monday in the next chapter of a battle to stop White Clay alcohol sales that's been ongoing since 1998. Nebraska State Senator Tom Brewer is an Ogallala Sioux tribal member and among those who pushed to close down the stores.
I saw the pictures of them loading the beer up too and the trucks moving out, which, you know, seemed so odd because you always saw the trucks arriving and dropping off beer, not picking it up and leaving with it. For me, I think it's a good day for White Clay. We've gone to a lot of expense and time to start the process of cleaning up White Clay.
Brewer says a meeting of the White Clay Task Force later this month will bring together Nebraska legislators, medical specialists, and economic development experts to chart a new path for the town. The state senator adds that charges pending against the White Clay liquor stores that include bootlegging make it unlikely they'll win an appeal. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Meanwhile, the lawyer for the four stores says he's considering filing a civil rights lawsuit against the state's governor. The Omaha World Herald reports attorney Andy Snyder accuses Governor Pete Ricketts of political meddling that ultimately forced the stores to close their doors. Snyder also filed a motion this week to dismiss nearly two dozen citations against the stores by the attorney general. A New Mexico woman made her bid official to become the first Native American woman elected to Congress. The Santa Fe New Mexican reports Deborah Holland from Laguna Pueblo filed her intent to run in the state's first congressional district, being vacated by Michelle Lujan Grisham. Holland is the former chairwoman of the state's Democratic Party. She was previously a candidate for lieutenant governor. In a statement, Holland says she has spent her life advocating for the underrepresented, advancing progressive values, and working to help elect Democrats up and down the ballot. James Singer, a member of the Navajo Nation, announced his intention to run in Utah's U.S. Senate race for the seat now held by Republican Orrin Hatch. The restaurant chain Sonic Drive-In is apologizing after what it acknowledges is an insensitive television ad. The commercial features a character dressed as General George Armstrong Custer as a ploy to promote the chain's frozen custard.
I am General George Custard, and you should address me with respect.
I think you're talking about General Custer.
Custard?
Custard.
Yeah, Custer. The name is Custard.
This is Custard. This is Custard.
This is Custard. This is Custard.
This is ridiculous.
That's audio from the commercial taken from the website iSpot.tv. Officials with the company headquartered in Oklahoma City pulled the ad after public outcry on social media and elsewhere complaining about the depiction of the U.S. Army general infamous for violently suppressing Native Americans in the 19th century. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support by Prairie Edge Trading Company, purveyors of traditional and contemporary Northern Plains Native American fine art, including buffalo skulls and robes, shields, weapons, clothing, music, and more at prairieedge.com. Wopila. Support by BNSF Railway Company, supporting STEM careers since 1990 as a corporate partner of the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. BNSF STEM scholarships available at aises.org/scholarships. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is about 6 minutes after the hour. You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon, and I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Here with me are my first guests, William Ransom and Reggie Schott, and they're here to talk about the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So which do you like better, jazz or classics?
I always say there's only two kinds of music in the world, good music and bad music. And we feature the best of not just jazz and classics, but also blues as well.
Oh, I love blues. I love it all. So for each of you, I just wanted to ask if you could tell our audience, what is your connection to the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival?
Reggie, would you like to go first?
Okay. I'm Reggie Schapp. I'm the executive director now at Juno Jazz and Classics. I've been with them. This will be my fourth festival. I was the production manager and administrator before this. So I've been around for a few years and was around when Linda started this 31 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. That's not your first rodeo.
Not my first rodeo.
How about you, Will?
Well, this is my first rodeo, at least here in Juno. After 30 years of founding and running this amazing festival, Linda Rosenthal retired, and I'm the new artistic director of the festival. So I choose all the music and the musicians that come out and perform for us.
Oh, wow, fantastic. That's a big job.
It is. It's a fun job. I relish both choosing the music and finding the best people to present it as well.
Cool. So I was wondering, it seems like there's very few people that have not heard of Juno Jazz and Classics, but I was new to town once. There are a lot of new people running around. So how would you describe this festival for someone who's never heard of it before?
Well, what I love about it is that it's so rooted in the community that we perform in venues all over town. We have all sorts of incredible experiences, from the public concerts and lots of free concerts and free events in the Alaskan Brewing Company and at the Heritage Cafe and at the outside the museum and at the office building, state office building, all over the place. And we have multiple events every day in our 16 days. And what is most exciting about it is that we bring the very best people from around the world to perform this music here in Juneau. They love coming to this spectacular place to see it and experience this part of the world and get to share and meet new audiences.
And we love to have them and love listening to the wonderful music that they make.
Just as excited about the education outreach our artists do. Every school in this district gets at least one visit from one of the groups that come here to Juno. So we're building musicians and audiences of the future.
Well, that's great for the kiddos. I bet they love that too.
It is. And we also offer a free family concert every year. This year's going to be on Sunday on Mother's Day at 3 p.m. over at the Perseverance Theater with the Axiom Brass Quintet.
Wonderful.
Really, really exciting young dynamic brass group.
Oh, that sounds so exciting.
Yeah.
What are some of the other performances that you'd like to highlight?
Well, we kick off this Friday night, just a few days from now, with the Congress, which is a really rockin' band. It's going to be great fun. This is not the group from Washington, D.C. that everybody hates. This is a really exciting band from that same area, though. But it's going to be so much fun, and that's our first event on Friday night. And then Saturday, we kick off with our blues cruises, which are so popular now. I think the first one is sold out. But
not quite. We're almost there for the first one. There's a few at 5 o'clock, but there's still room on the 9 o'clock, too.
Right. And you want to come for that. That's the rowdy crowd on the late one. Come have
the
some
dessert cruise.
Some great fun for those. And then we're off and running with a mix of great classical music. We have one of the favorite artists, really, from around the world now, Zool Bailey, cellist, who just won 3 Grammy Awards a couple of months ago. And he's celebrating by coming to Juneau, of course. And he's going to be playing a couple of programs, one called Musical Fireworks, which is these really beautiful and virtuosic showpieces for cello and piano. We've got some fun programs like Alaskan Trout, where we'll have, if you'd like, you can come have a trout dinner at T.K. McGuire's beforehand and then come to the concert and hear Schubert's great Trout Quintet. His Trout Quintet, one of the most delightful pieces of classical chamber music. We've got Beethoven's Fifth, where we're featuring the Fifth Cello Sonata, the Fifth String Quartet, and the Great Fifth Symphony for piano four hands, like you've never heard it before, with this incredible dynamic pianist, Julie Kucheron, that you all are all going to just fall in love with, and she'll be joining me. I'm a pianist myself, so we'll do that for four hands.
Yeah, that was my next question, actually. If either of you are musicians and performing at the festival, would you like to say more, Will?
Yes, so I'm part of my many hats is that I'm a classical pianist. I travel around the world performing both as a soloist and in chamber music as well. I'm based in Atlanta at Emory University, where I run the Emory Chamber Music Society of Atlanta, and also direct the Highlands Cashers Chamber Music Festival in North Carolina. But I'll be performing on, I think, about four or so of the concerts this summer with some of our wonderful, wonderful guest artists.
Fantastic. And Reggie, your art form is organization.
It's organization. I like to organize things, so it works very well.
Yeah. Good. What events apart from performances are also going to be a part of the festival this year?
Besides performances this year, we're in the education and outreach in the schools, and some of those are public workshops that are going to be happening on both Tuesday nights. The first Tuesday night is the string workshop, and we have violinist, viola, cellist, and double bass string workshops available. And then the next Tuesday, it will be a jazz workshop, a brass workshop, and a piano workshop.
Wow.
So those are, people get a chance to meet the artist and basically have a master class with these fantastic musicians.
Yeah, if you play yourself or if your kids play, check us out online and sign up for one of these classes. You can come play a short prepared piece for them, and it's kind of like a public private lesson that people can also observe, and you learn by watching the master musicians and teachers work with the younger players as well. But they're open to any age, so you know, if you took up piano late in life and would like to get some expert instruction from some remarkable musicians, come on by.
There is a minimal cost to those, but we also have a wonderful education fund. And if someone can't afford but still would like to attend, just call the office. There are scholarships available.
Oh, that's great. Good to hear. So anything new or different about the festival this year that you guys want to touch on?
Well, it's all new for me because this is my first year. But I think we've tried to streamline it, and especially this first year, keep that same tradition that Linda built for 30 years of just the most exciting and beautiful and fun music and performers that really reach out and touch the audiences.
Great. Well, let's talk about the details. So when and where is the kickoff concert? How much are tickets and all that good stuff?
The first concert is this Friday, yep. May 5th, and it's going to be at Elizabeth Paradovich Hall with the Congress, and it's a dance party. There's going to be places to sit down if you want, but there'll be a large dance floor. And the tickets are available at jazzandclassics.org, at the Jack, as well as at Hearthside Books. And they're $30 general, little less for seniors and students.
Oh, fantastic.
And it's going to be great fun. Great music. Also, as Reggie said, you can dance if you want to. There's a bar. Is that
right? Yeah, there's a bar. Yeah.
Oh, so, good.
Yeah.
We don't want you to go thirsty.
Nobody wants that. And Juno loves a good dance party. So.
And we start at 7:30. There's so much going on Friday night. But we're after everybody else. So when you're done at First Friday and the museum and the brewing company, come on by for the dance.
That sounds like a great plan. Okay, and where's the best place to find out more information about the whole festival? Would that be the website?
Our website is the best one, at jazzandclassics.org, or you can call the office at 463-3378.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Anything else you'd like to add?
We hope to see everybody at the festival.
I'm sure you will. Okay, great. Thanks. We've got one song coming up next from the Congress called Ain't It Easy.
May means Juno Jazz and Classics, kicking off Friday, May 5th with the Congress, a dynamic mix of R&B, classic country, rock and roll, and old school soul, known for jazzy sound, as versatile as unpredictable. Dance with the Congress, May 5th at 7:30 at A&B's Bratrovich Hall, or catch them on the two blues cruises Saturday night, sailing from Auk Bay at 5 and 9. Tickets are at Hearthside, The Jack, and JunoJazzAndClassics.org.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon, and my next guest is here to talk about a new exhibit at the Juno Douglas City Museum. Welcome, Kaya.
Thank you.
Could you please introduce yourself and tell us how you're connected to the City Museum?
So my name is Kaya Henriksen, and I'm the Public Programs Coordinator at the City Museum. So I arrange public programs, art openings, education tours.
Oh, fantastic. So do you have a favorite item on display in the City Museum?
So in terms of the whole museum collection, I think my favorite display right now, we have a new exhibit about Juno businesses. And so it's a case full of all different objects from businesses over the years, and it has an iSpy component that's just a lot of fun to stand there and look at all the different mugs and matchbooks and unusual business-related materials.
The iSpy component, is it sort of like a little visual scavenger hunt?
Yeah, so our curator put together some historical information about each type of business, so banks, laundries, all sorts of things, and then on the back is a list of iSpy, so you can try to find the objects related to that category in the display.
Oh, that sounds like great fun. Cool. So let's talk about the new exhibit. It has kind of an unusual name. Would you tell us what it's called and why it's called that?
Sure. So the exhibit is called Stuff, Stories, and Sticky Notes, Collection Objects, and Community Stories. And it's going to be up all summer, so it's our big summer exhibit. So it's an exhibit that we invited 12 members of the Juno community to come into the museum and look through our collection storage and to pick out, each person picked out an item that spoke to them in some way, and then they wrote a piece about it. So some people wrote about the history of the item. Some people wrote more of a memoir of something the item reminded them of. Some people wrote poems. We have some that are more of a reflection or creative historical fiction. So the objects and the pieces that were written are going to be on display. And then the sticky note component is an interactive part. So we also have some objects from our education collection that are on display and a whole pile of large stickies with pens. So visitors can look at the objects, and if something speaks to them, they can write their own story on the sticky and then post it on the wall.
Oh, wow. Well, I like that interactive element.
And even though the show has been up just this week, we already have a few sticky note stories on the wall. So it's fun to go down each day and see if someone put something new up. And allow our visitors to add some creativity to our show.
I like it. That sounds really great. Is there anything else special about the show that you'd like to talk about, or a particular item that you're excited about?
I think it's nice that we have a lot of large items that people select at this time. So we have some big objects in our collection, big sewing machine, doctor's bag, Oshkosh wardrobe trunk that, you know, they're normally not on display. So it's nice to be able to have those out for people to look at.
Yeah, that sounds great. So you said this exhibit is going on all summer. It's already open.
Yes. So it's been open this week. The official opening reception is on Friday during First Friday. So that'll be from 4:30 to 7. And our opening reception is free. And then the exhibits and the stories will be on view through the end of October.
And is there a cost associated with the exhibit?
So if you come to the First Friday reception, there's no cost. Now that we're in our summer hours, we are charging our summer admission. So it's, if you come to the museum during the week, it's $6 general admission, $5 for seniors, and free for ages 12 and under.
Oh, fantastic. $6, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and we have a lot of new, a lot of other new and updated exhibits on view. So even if you've been to the City Museum in the last year, it's worth coming back. We have a new fishing exhibit. Our hands-on mining room has a few new exhibits. We've received some new cases this year, and we're just making other changes and tweaks. So there's a lot of new things to see.
That's great to hear. It's a lovely museum. And would you remind us where it's located for those who might not know?
Sure. We're at the corner of 4th and Main, so it's right across from the Capitol building. And we're open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturdays 10 to 4:30.
Great. And is there a website if you need more information?
Yes. It's www.juno.org/library/museum.
Easy.
And we're also on Facebook through our friends at, it's just Juno Museum Friends.
Great. I'm going to go like you guys as soon as the show is over.
Excellent.
And then apart from this exhibit and all the other cool stuff in the museum, you've got a couple other things you wanted to touch on.
Yes. So our friends group is sponsoring a free presentation in honor of the sesquicentennial, and that'll be taking place tomorrow, May 4th, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., and it'll be at the Jack, not at the museum.
Okay.
And the presentation will be led by Discovery Southeast's Richard Carstensen, and it's titled 1867 to 2017, 150 Years of Change, Ok-Ani, Small Lake Tribe Land at the Time of Purchase. And so he'll be talking about what this area was like in 1867 when the United States purchased Russian interests in Alaska, and then comparing it to 2017. And Richard put together some great photos, aerial photos of present day, and then some photo images that he created of what the area probably looked like in 1867. So there will be on large panels for people to compare.
Oh, that sounds cool. That's tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then
next week we're starting our historic downtown walking tours. So those take place every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday starting next week and going through September 21st. and they're from 1:30 to 3. And they start at the museum and last, as I said, about an hour and a half. And they include admission, a 20% discount in our shop, and tea time at the Capitol Inn. And then just next week, Wednesday and Thursday evening, we have two special evening tours. Wednesday is with Mike Blackwell and Thursday with Brenda Wright. And if you want more information about tours or how to reserve tickets, you can go to our website.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Kaya. Anything else that I haven't, that I've maybe forgotten to ask or that you'd like to add?
Not that I can think of, just we really appreciate, I guess I just want to say we really appreciate all of the support that we've gotten from the community in the last few weeks.
Absolutely.
And please come visit us.
Great. Well, I certainly will. Thank you very much for all the excellent information.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 3rd of May, 2017. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, "A prince never lacks legitimate reasons to break his promise." Niccolo Machiavelli, born in Florence, 1469. At a time when Italy was not a unified country, it was a collection of city-states, a time of instability, Machiavelli lost his job when the city government of Florence was overthrown by the Medici family, and he wrote his book, The Prince, in 1513 as an instruction manual on obtaining and holding on to power in hopes that he could impress the Medicis and get a job with them. He wrote that morality was irrelevant when it came to running a state, that rulers should be willing to do evil when necessary to hold on to power and maintain security. It's the birthday of the photographer and social reformer Jacob Riis, born in Ribe, Denmark, 1849, whose flash photographs of living conditions in the slums of New York helped bring about housing reforms. It's the birthday of the Israeli poet and novelist Yehuda Amichai, born Ludwig Pfeffer in Würzburg, Germany, 1924. Moved to Palestine, became an Israeli citizen, and was one of the first poets to write in colloquial Hebrew. And it's the birthday of the poet and novelist May Sarton, born in Vondelgem, Belgium, 1912, came to this country as a child, thought she would go into the theater, and then a series of her sonnets was published in Poetry Magazine in 1930, and she decided to become a writer. Also a memoirist, her memoir Journal of a Solitude came out in 1973. She had a stroke in 1990. She couldn't write anymore, but she produced three more journals and a volume of verse by dictating them into a tape recorder. Here's a poem for today by Julie Sheehan, Polar Bear in the Central Park Zoo. Watched, captivating, he swims to the rocky shelf and berths a beat before pushing off with plate-sized foot, belly up, yellow head plowing a watery furrow. He soaks, a forepaw backstrokes the water once idly but with force enough to speed his streamlined bulk across the dole of open sea he's fathomed utterly. He dives as if tethered, submerged body spread and flat against the viewing glass, mounted momentarily a trophy hide on the lodge wall. Watchers shriek, but he moves on, his fixed orbit, waterlogged planet up to the rock, a push, one backstroke, dive, eyes closed the while, his swim compulsory as a Busby Berkeley routine has captivated the bear too, or made him half captive, while the other half, repeating his invention move for move, seeks a different outcome, a new mercy, colder, austere, more genuine ice. Polar Bear in the Central Park Zoo, a poem by Julie Sheehan, from Orient Point, published by W.W. Norton and Company, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by Staples, with print and marketing solutions designed to promote businesses, including business cards, presentations, large banners, and posters, printed in-store or ordered online. Learn more at Staples and Staples.com. Staples. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The Juno World Affairs Council presents Europe, America's Partner or America's Problem, with Constanze Stelzenmüller this Thursday, May 4th, 5 p.m. at KTOO Studios. Constanze Stelzenmüller is a senior fellow in the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution, an expert on German, European, and transatlantic foreign and security policy, and a former editor of the German weekly Die Zeit. She's a frequent commentator on American and European radio and television, including National Public Radio and the BBC. That's May the 4th, Star Wars Day, 5 p.m. at 360.
You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. It's about 31 minutes after the hour. I'm here with my next guest, Joel Salatin and Michelle Hayworth. And Joel is a farmer from Virginia, and he is giving a lecture tonight as part of the Alaska Design Forum. So welcome, Joel.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Michelle as well. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show. I understand you had some workshops going on this week. Would you like to talk a little bit about those?
Well, yes. I'm in Juneau today, but I've already been in Anchorage and Fairbanks, and here in Juneau tonight doing a presentation. We're doing workshops in each of those cities as well. Michelle can probably tell us a little more, you know, how they're structured and what the plan is.
Sure. So we brought Joel Salatin up as part of our nostalgia lecture series, and we brought him up because he is a system designer is what I would call him. He practices permaculture and farming that heals the land and heals people. And so we wanted to do some talks and some workshops in these different communities of Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. And in doing some research on what these communities might want from Joel, I realized that each of these communities is really different. And so in Anchorage, we're working on a local food web. In Juneau, we were going to talk a lot about food policy, but the workshop sort of dictated more about local food web and the problems with that are happening in Juneau. And then in Fairbanks, it was more micro-scale farming, more directed at people who are doing small-scale farming there. And then his lectures in each city will be about his work.
So when you say farming and systems, are we talking mostly about growing plants or plants and animals? Or
well, we're talking about growing all of it, but our particular farm is known for pasture-based livestock. So we have beef, pork, chicken, turkeys, rabbit, duck, lamb. We're in all sorts of animals. We do grow a lot of vegetables for ourselves and some to sell. And some fruit and things, but we're, you know, our farm is known for its livestock component.
I see.
And also, I mean, and an additional thing is that we sell everything direct. So we're not selling to a supermarket. We're not, we don't sell through middle people. We are the middleman as well. And so we've done a lot of marketing and a kind of, you know, carving out a niche, you know, a local brand name, if you will, you know, within our bioregion there.
Oh, that's great. And when you Michelle, said that you work on farming that heals the land and also heals people. Can you tell more about
I
that?
Don't.
Sorry,
this is,
Joel.
Yeah. This is all Joel.
Yeah.
Tell me, what does that mean?
Well, what that means is that you know, our current food system is not healing much. We're suffering from everything from soil erosion to water pollution to nutrient deficiency in our foods, and a disrespect of the biological beings, whether it's animals or plants or whatever, you know, under our care. And so What we want to do is as a result of our farming, we want to actually increase the commons. So there's more soil, more potable water, more breathable air, and more cultural equity than there was before we started farming. And this idea that you can actually farm productively and profitably commercially and actually leave the land better and increase the nutrient density of food, that's a notion that we don't hear much today. We usually think, well, you know, we got to feed ourselves, so we've got to, you know, we've got to destroy our nest in the process to feed ourselves. And so it's a very hopeful message to tell people, to explain and show to people, yes, we can have our cake and eat it too. We can feed ourselves, and we can do it in a way that actually enhances the planet, enhances the ecology, enhances wildlife, and enhances the commons.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. And did you, in your travels, have you learned much about how we're doing that here in Alaska?
Well, yes, I've been on a couple farms here in Alaska already, and they've been delightful. Now they've been small, but there's nothing. You know, I love small. Small is beautiful, and it's also very, very efficient. Many times more efficient even than a large farm as far as, you know, efficiency per square yard, and so. So, you know, it's been really delightful to be in Alaska. I will say that of all the places I've been, and I've been all over the world, this has been probably one of the most challenging places just because of temperature and light, and there's nobody here. You know, it's a, I know you're here, but the population density creates market challenges, and the sparseness, the spread outness of the population makes everything from transportation to finding markets to just, well, connecting dots a little more of a challenge. And especially here in Juneau, I think, in that the population is smaller, you're very locked in. And there's simply not a lot of land. But at the workshop this morning, we had several farmers, and everything from aeroponics to aquaponics to tube farming, patio farming, farming on the roof. There's a lot that can be done. And so while it's easy, you know, to have a pity party and say, well, it's just really tough here, instead. Within a couple of hours here today, with these local farmers, there were a lot of really great techniques and progress being made in creating resiliency in the food system here.
Well, that's great to hear. Did you get any leads on? Were there any crops that surprised you as far as like doing well in Southeast Alaska?
Well, I've learned that probably nothing grows here like kale. Kale grows really well.
Rhubarb.
One of the big challenges here in Juneau is that there's no grain. So everything has to be barged in. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very expensive to grow, you know, chickens and pigs and things. But, you know, historically, if you look back at our ancestors, the omnivore, you know, the reason chickens were always up around the homestead was because the chickens were the scavengers. They ate the kitchen scraps, the food scraps, and you know, spoiled things in the garden and all that. And so what I learned this morning was that Juneau basically landfills all of its food scraps. And in unless it's real different here, and I doubt that it is, you could, if you diverted that food scrap to poultry, to chickens that lay eggs, you wouldn't have to buy eggs anywhere, and you wouldn't have any waste to go to the landfill. It solves lots and lots of problems. And this has been done in Belgium. A city actually did an initiative where they bought households that wanted them three chickens. And they had 2,000 households, you know, raise their hands. Yep, I'll take those chickens. They bought 6,000 chickens, distributed them to the 2,000 households. And in the first month, they reduced their landfill waste by 100 tons.
Oh, my goodness.
And they had eggs. And so this kind of integrated food approach is a key for ultimate, you know, local sustainability and resilience. And so it's just a redesign, a rework of some of the pathways, you know, the food chains and the cycles that we do. And we just need to rework those a little bit, and you get all sorts of win-wins.
Fantastic. Well, that's great information, and I'm going to write that idea down for sure. I'd love to reduce my footprint, as they say. Anything else you'd like to mention before we wrap up this interview? Your lecture is tonight, but I understand it's sold out. It will be here at 360 North. And any other parting thoughts?
I just look forward to coming back to Alaska again. It's been real delightful, and it's been a great education to meet folks and see things here. And it's always good to, you know, to look at the, you know, what we call the, you know, the shoulders of farming. I mean, you know, spread your awareness to the most difficult places. And one of the things you realize here is, you know, what's funny is 95% of the food is imported here. Well, in my county in Virginia, 95% of the food is imported. In Iowa, 95% of the food is imported. So in that respect, we're the same. Where we're different probably is it's a little easier to solve it where I am than it is here. But that just means everybody has to buck up and be a little more creative and a little more persistent and a little more savvy, and you can lead the way.
Well, thank you very much. I think Alaskans are up to the challenge.
Absolutely.
Well, looking forward to hearing more from you tonight, and thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Millions of birds are winging their way north, some over thousands of miles. In her jazz composition, Cerulean Skies, composer Maria Schneider and her band celebrate their return.
What really inspires me when I'm looking at the birds that I see in Central Park is imagining the journey that they've been on. All these birds, thousands of birds, are going up into the air and disappearing, a little pinprick into the sky. And then we go into the mind's eye of one little warbler that's navigating and flying by the light of the stars. They're so delicate, and you think about the mystery of it all, and you just think, wow, we're so small in what we can do, and this is just, it's so big. And then you feel completely insignificant, and at the same time, it makes you feel more significant because you're a part of it. That's what I love about getting out in nature and taking those things in.
To hear more of our interview with Maria Schneider, join us at birdnote.org.
It is about 17 minutes to the top of the hour. You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me is my next guest, Judy Meyer. Welcome, Judy.
Thank you very much, Shelley.
What brings you here to the show today?
Well, I've been working with the YES Exchange Program, Youth Exchange and Study, which was an initiative of Ted Kennedy and Dick Lugar right after 9/11. And their goal was to bring young people from the Middle East to this country. And Juno has been involved almost all the time. This is our sixth year, and we have hosted 19 kids in
wow.
Juno. And this year, we have Age Tescan from Turkey and Mahmoud Abouashi from Gaza. And these two young, fine young men have had a great year here. Their host families adore them. And they go home soon. They go home in June. But they've had a great experience. They've done sports and theater and community service and made a lot of friends, and are really a part of their host families.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And go ahead. These kids will be presenting on Sunday night, May the 7th, at 7 o'clock at the Old Catholic Church in the Valley, which is on the corner of Athlin and Mendenhall Loop Road. And it's the church that they used before they built the new church.
Okay.
And it's now sort of a social meeting hall. And they'll be there at 7 o'clock. And everybody's welcome. And I'm always looking for host families for these remarkable young people. And we've had 19, and they brought their world to us and to the high school and their ideas, and they take home new ideas, and those are some of the things they'll want to share.
How did they like Juno?
Well, they love it. They like the snow. They've liked skiing. They've liked hiking and camping and skating and lots of freedom to do things, especially things in the outdoors that they never would have gotten to do. And Rich Moniak, who does this program with me, has taken them to the Conference on World Issues for 5 years. And they were there, and he said that they were as engaged in the discussions as any of our kids ever have been.
Wonderful.
And last year our kids presented, and they were the first teenagers ever to be invited to present on that forum.
Wow.
And people come from all over the world. Nobody is paid. And they're remarkable. There are 50,000 applicants for this program. And every year the State Department selects 700 out of 50,000.
So it's very special to have them here in town. And they're speaking about their experiences in the U.S., on Sunday, May 7th, 7 p.m., as you said, at the Community Hall, St. Paul's Parish. Is there anywhere we can go to find more information?
Well, students can talk to Ege at Juno Douglas High School, and students at Thunder Mountain can talk to Mahmoud. And that will be a good way. But otherwise, I think the best thing to do is to come on Sunday night. And if anybody wants to call me about the possibility of hosting for next year, I would be delighted. My phone number is 789-9229. And we have had 19 students, and the hardest part is sending them home again.
I'm sure it's very, very sad.
But they're really connected, and they go home with new ideas and new aspirations and new strength in themselves. They have a lot to share.
That sounds great. Well, thank you very much for being here today, Judy, and sharing that wonderful information with us. It sounds like a great event.
I hope everybody will take advantage of it, because these young men have a lot to share. Thank you, Shelley.
Keep going.
right, we're listening to a track from the Defibrillators called Everybody's Got a Banjo, which reminded me of Folk Fest. The Defibrillators are going to be playing at the Juno Jazz and Classics this month. This is the Juno Afternoon. It is about 10 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me here is my next guest, the one and only Gigi Monroe.
Hey, Shelley.
Hi. So Gigi's here to talk about the Pride, some upcoming Pride events, and it's just a real honor to have you here. I'm an enormous fan.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so good to be back.
Oh, I've got the wrong mic on you. There we go.
Oh.
There we go. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
You've just got me so flustered. I'm all starstruck.
That's very sweet.
All right. So first things first, why is it important to celebrate Pride in Juneau?
Well, Pride is something that we've celebrated here in Juneau for a while now, and it is basically just an honoring and a celebration of all things LGBTQ, and that stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning, and it's sort of the umbrella term that we use just to encompass all of those folks, and we take a week in June every year to do that, so this year it starts on June 10th, and we've got lots of things coming up to gear up for that celebration.
So what are some of the things you're looking forward to the most, or what's coming up first?
Well, the first thing is one of my drag shows at the Rendezvous this Saturday night, and we're auctioning off a pair of tickets to David Sedaris,
which is
sold out.
Yep.
So if you haven't gotten your tickets, we have a pair of tickets for auction, which is really, really exciting. And the drag shows at Rendezvous happen every few months, and they're so much fun. They're 21 and up. It starts at 8 o'clock, and we have a great time. You just get tickets at the door. Come early if you want good seating.
Yeah, that's a good tip. I've been to a lot of the shows, and they're always packed, but such a good time. That's exciting. I'll put that one on my calendar. And then you mentioned there's a film fest?
Yeah, so then on Monday we start a Pride Film Fest at the Gold Town, and it's always such a pleasure to work with the Gold Town on bringing in really interesting and unique films that have to do with LGBTQ people and issues that you wouldn't normally see. So on Monday we start with the first film called Kiki, and it's kind of a modern Paris is Burning, if you've ever seen that film that took place in the 70s about the Vogue culture in New York. And this is sort of a new look at LGBTQ youth of color in New York who are throwing these fabulous, like, dance competition parties and have a whole subculture around it. So we're kicking off with that and a free spaghetti dinner on Monday. So that's at 7 o'clock, and the dinner is at 6:30. And then the second film we're showing is Deep Run, and Deep Run is about trans life in rural North Carolina. So that should be really, really interesting. The next one is a really cool film that comes out of Canada called Too Soft Things, Too Hard Things, which is a phrase that is an indigenous term for LGBTQ people. And so it's about the Inuit people and how they have dealt with the issues of sexual orientation and gender identity in a cultural context over the years. So that's fascinating. And then we finish out with a non-documentary, the only non-documentary of the series. It's called Closet Monster. And it is actually like a thriller about literally a closet monster.
That's not what I was thinking.
Yeah. So that should be really fun. Anyway, it starts on Monday and it goes for 2 weeks. We're going to go we have a couple of weekday showings and weekend showings, and so you can find out all the information you need about that on either the Gold Town Nickelodeon website or at SEGLA.org. That's SEAGLA.org.
Fantastic. Well, we've only got a few minutes, unfortunately, but I realized when I introduced you, I didn't really introduce you because I assume everybody knows who Gigi Monroe is, but you are a performer. Would you like to say a little bit more about what you do in the community?
Sure. My name is James, and I do drag, and my drag queen name is Gigi Monroe. So some people may know me that way, but I love doing drag as a form of self-expression and as an outlet for creativity. And I invite lots of folks to perform with me. And we have wonderful drag queens and drag kings here in Juneau. And every so often we get together and we put together a big fun show about not taking life too seriously and just having a really good time. So that's my alter ego, and I wear both hats proudly.
Well, thanks for coming on the show today. Thanks for sharing all that great info. It was awesome to have you on. And speaking of your performances, last time I saw you, you were doing Reba, so I got a little bit of Reba to play you out.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks again, Gigi.
Thanks, Ellie.
Here's Fancy.
Turned 18. We lived in a one-room run-down shack on the outskirts of New Orleans. We didn't have money for food or rent, to say the least. We were hard-pressed. And Mama spent every last penny we had to buy me a dancing dress. Well, Mama washed and combed and curled my hair, and she painted my eyes and lived it. Then I stepped into a satin dancing dress that had a split from the side clean up to my ear. It was red velvet trimming and it fitting me good. Standing back from the looking glass, there stood a woman where a half-grown kid had stood. She said, here she wants his fancy, don't let me down. She said, here she wants his fancy, don't let me down. Mama dabbed a little bit of perfume on my neck, then she kissed my cheek. And then I saw the tears welling up in her troubled eyes as she started to speak. She looked at a pitiful shack and then she looked at me and took a ragged breath. She said, your paw's run off and I'm real sick and the baby's gonna starve to death. She handed me a heart-shaped
lock. KTOO is thrilled for the upcoming evening with David Sedaris on May 14th. To alleviate crowding that night, we highly encourage ticket holders to pick theirs up before the event. Come by KTOO starting on Monday, May 8th through Friday, May 12th between the hours of 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Grab your tickets early so you just need to be seated that night. More information about seating, the book signing, and the wait list at KTOO.org. Again, pick up your Sedaris Will Call tickets in advance next week between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m.
Hi, you tuned into a Juno Afternoon, and I'm with my last guest, Andy and
Chelsea
and
Darren Jensen.
We only have a few minutes, but we're here to talk about
beer.
Beer.
Let's talk about beer, shall we?
Raspberry wheat.
Let's get a bottle open. Let's start tasting
it
right now.
That was my first question.
We know we only have a couple of minutes, so we want to talk about raspberry wheat release day happening this Saturday at the brewery.
Woo-hoo!
Tasting room.
Yes.
Kelsey
Amazing.
Runs the tasting room out there. She runs all of our retail stuff, so it's her responsibility to do it right. So, Kelsey, it's on you.
It's going to be super fun. We're also having some floats with raspberry wheat and ice cream from Copa. It's come get your float, come get your raspberry.
Wow, floats, huh?
Yeah.
I know raspberry wheat is super popular. Is it only in the summer?
It's only in the summer. We kind of only release it May, June, that kind of time area. It's a kind of a limited release for
Thank
us.
You.
And it's one of those ones that's really special for us. And the other thing that we wanted to mention real quick is that when people do go out to the tasting room, we've got some really amazing, cool new features in the tasting room. We're now selling flights of beer. We're selling pints of beer. And we've got really cool things, new things available for people that are crew brews. So our limited edition beers are out there as well.
All right. Well, it tastes delicious. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but I think we have time to finish our beers, and now I got to turn it back on to All Things Considered.
Thanks,
Thanks
Thank
for being
you.
Here.
Cheers.
Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS, an excursion inlet in Icy Strait.